Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan here, as always, with producer Mike. Hello, audience. How are you? Hey, Mike. What's going on?
Hello, everybody. How you doing? It's nice to see you all. J.L., it's thanks for coming in.
Crack of dawn. You know what Mike says to me? I'm telling you,
after these 6 o'clock recordings, that I am fried. I don't even speak English, I feel like.
Well, that's, you know, I'm like a great athlete. I'm a fourth quarter player, so I actually bring my best game late in the day.
Yeah, I'm a first and second quarter guy exclusively.
Yeah.
I'm not a finisher.
Well, that's all right. I just want to get right to my first topic today,
Mike. Okay.
I was at the theater last night, and we've talked about the theater a few times on this show.
We both love it.
And I took my mom. It was a birthday present for my mom, who just turned 80. I took her and Laura, Laura tag along also, to see MJ the Musical, which is a show at first, when it came out a few years ago, I was like, oh, Lord, another. Like, and it feels a little like cheating whenever they nominate. It's like, well, yeah, when Michael Jackson's catalog is your music,
mm-hmm.
You start at a great advantage in terms of making a good product, right?
Are we going to have a best-selling soundtrack?
Right. Let's see. If we, it's like, okay, so this is the greatest album of all time, so let's start from there, and you could make a mediocre right. product, and it would still be like, well, like Bohemian Rhapsody is the movie version of what of the negative, where it's like, this is not a good movie, but every time I'm like, this is not a, oh, another one bites the dust. Hell yeah. Oh, why is he looking, oh, Live Aid. This is fucking awesome. Boy, is it me or does this fucking movie suck? We will rock you. And that movie stunk.
Oh, it's awful.
And I can't believe so bad, he won Best Actor for that.
I can't remember who he was up against. I didn't think that he was bad.
Hello, darlings. How are you? Hey, oh.
I thought he did as well as he could have done in a really bad movie. The movie is just unsavably bad.
And it was nominated for bad. Like 10 Oscars.
Yeah, it's awful, dude. And it's apparently, do you know the story about Live Aid? How it's not, they make it out in the movie to sound like he has AIDS
that,
already.
The whole fucking and thing was clearly
he doesn't have AIDS
by
for
Queen.
Like 2 more years.
Right, and yeah. I love how they're like, you know, it's okay, you've got AIDS here.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, and I'm not, this is me giving, you know, saying, just like we too often judge people by like modern standards, that I'm giving them credit and saying, no way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And saying that's okay when it was new. I'm not saying discrimination is okay, but justifiable fear about a new deadly disease is okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did that. And I love how Sacha Baron Cohen quit the project because yeah. He basically wanted to be like, I want to fuck on camera. If I can't fuck, I'm not doing it. It's not authentic. I want cum on my face or else I'm not. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. Yeah. I don't think he said that. But the point is, that movie stunk. But yeah. That's what that movie did. It was like, you'd be amazed how good a movie can feel if the soundtrack is A+.
Yeah.
And integrated into the story. So it's not just like Suicide Squad is an example of a movie that sucks. That has a good soundtrack, but it has nothing to do with the plot. It's just like, boy, does this movie say, hey, that's a good song.
Yeah, yeah.
But this, at least, it's like those 40 minutes of singing are part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So when MJ the Musical came out, you know, I was like, I don't know. I'm not in a hurry to see this.
Yeah.
But then it was written by this woman. The book was done by this woman, Lynn Nottage, if I'm pronouncing it right. But I had seen, she's like a 2-time Pulitzer Prize winner for drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, that's a heavy hitter. I remember I saw a play of hers. I think it was called Ruined. I took a date to that. It was about like female circumcision in Africa.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And I was like,
comedy?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's sort of. I mean, when I write it in my memoir, it will be. imagine trying to go home and fuck after seeing that.
I tell you.
But MJ the Musical ended up getting a lot of Tony nominations. Now, that in and of itself is also not a guarantee of something being like great or really good.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom said to me a few months ago, she was like, have you guys, because she knows me and Laura go to the theater, have you guys seen that MJ the Musical? Now, my mom is the type of person, when she asks a question, that's as close as you're getting to interest. She's not going to tip her hand and be like, boy, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
It's just more like, you guys seen that MJ?
Yeah.
Interesting. And I was like, okay, she wants to see it.
Yeah.
So we got three tickets to see it. We went last night. We didn't even get the new replacement for the guy who won the Tony, because the guy who won the Tony, he's the youngest Tony winner ever for if lead actor in a musical.
For playing Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Okay. He's gone, obviously. You win the Tony for that. Your agent immediately starts fielding million-dollar offers from other places.
Right.
But we didn't get the new guy, whoever the new guy is. We got the understudy for the new guy. Mm. But he's pretty good. But watching this show, first off, I need to give it credit. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Like, there are a couple of numbers in particular. The first act ends with They Don't Really Care About Us, which is a song of his off of History. Very underrated Michael Jackson album, because it was like greatest hits. But that album, there was an entire new album with that double CD. It's really good. And that is the showstopper for me, the first act ender. I mean, in literally everything, the choreography, the song, the singing, the stage direction, the stage design, A+. And then Thriller in the second act is great, because they play it off almost like, you know, like it's his father haunting him.
Mm.
Yeah, really good. Really good.
So it's a show, it's about Michael Jackson.
Yes.
So it's like the story of his life.
Minus a few things.
That's what I was going to ask about. So Thriller is his father haunting him, but there's nothing about him haunting 12-year-old men, no. Boys.
Wow. Well, he'd love that if they were 12-year-old yeah, men, okay. If the law considered them men.
My bad.
Wow, lead counsel for the Jackson estate, Mike Coscarelli. This elderly 9-year-old, sir, as you can see. This baby moves just like an old man. They both wear diapers. How was I supposed to know? But it was great. Great. And now here's the thing. I've seen a few of these musicals. Jersey Boys, loved it.
Yeah, I like Jersey Boys too.
I think my favorite of this brand of musical that Jersey Boys kind of started, where it's a brilliant play.
Mm-hmm.
Integrate the music that's already a hit into the story. So you know, it's a great shorthand for guaranteeing at least a workable, if not really good, musical.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't Too Proud, the Temptations one, amazing. I love that. It was almost like you take the put the race right into it. Jersey Boys is Larry Bird. Great music, a little more composed, not as flashy. Ain't Too Proud was Magic Johnson. They were companions, but yeah. I liked watching Magic a little bit more.
Sure, okay.
And it was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. And then it closed during the pandemic. Like, the pandemic is actually what killed that one, which is sad because it was, I think, doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So we go see MJ. Great. But you know, when you're seeing this music, there's going to be a lot of nostalgia. There's going to be a lot of enthusiasm. There's going to be a lot of black people. And there is a certain amount where you're like, yeah, this is not meant to be a sit in your seat and the bard right. has written a brilliant piece.
Right.
There's going to be an enthusiasm disproportional to the typical musical, of course.
Yeah, you're literally listening to...
That's expected.
Right.
You're listening to the soundtrack of your youth or your teens or just classics. It's
yes.
You know, like Rock of Ages, no different, like much worse show.
Yes.
But Rock of Ages...
Much worse music, too.
I think there might have been a Foreigner song or two in there.
Oh, no. I hope not.
But Rock of Ages, Tom Cruise, great performance in the movie aside,
yeah.
as like the one thing that stands out from Rock of Ages is Tom Cruise actually still brought everything he had
yeah.
to that movie. But that was the white version of it. Now, mm-hmm. Michael Jackson is universal, of course, but I'm just saying, you know, Rock of Ages was 95% white. And it was like, yeah, Journey, yeah. Don't Stop Believing. Okay, but it was like, you know, within that realm is mm-hmm. what I was looking for. The worst behaved audience I've ever seen at a musical. And all due respect to Roger Bart, who a few episodes ago shot a look of death at a woman asking him a question. He might have gone full Neo in the Matrix on this audience. Like, he might have just pulled out of his trench coat and be like, it was an abomination. When I say that the ushers had to tell double-digit times people to stop filming, When I tell you that an usher had to check a trio of white women, so it wasn't all black people misbehaving, a trio of white women in the front row who were clearly attempting to take it to church.
Oh, yeah?
That's bad. When I tell you three cell phones went off, it's that. And when I tell you the guy in front, when I tell you that the two people sitting in front of me were there, but their two friends showed up 15 minutes late.
And were let in?
Into the show. Left 20 minutes after they arrived to get a round of drinks at the bar downstairs.
Oh, come on, so guys.
Up, down. And then when I tell you, Mike, that's not the worst thing. All the things I've been saying, not the worst. There's something even worse than what's happened. A couple was let in 35 minutes into the show. And I thought, you know what? If you want to let them in an intermission, fine. There's no reason to keep them out then.
That's usually how it works.
5 minutes? No.
No, no.
It ain't happening.
So this is just one big Michael Jackson concert, basically. This is not a Broadway show.
Except it was.
I know it was.
And the sad thing about it was that's why They Don't Really Care About Us and Thriller were so big and incredible that you were like, okay, it's drowning out all the bullshit. But the people filming, the people, like, and there was a couple, an older black couple, like two rows in front of me, one row over, like I was on the aisle, they're on the other aisle. Mm-hmm. This is what I didn't hear her fucking voice, but, and I was like, fine, exuberant, loving the fucking show. Mm-hmm. Great. Nobody's going to check that. But the person in front took like 9 different videos, was like sneaking it. I'm like, what the fuck? Are you a bootlegger?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are you doing? And my favorite, like small moment. Those are all the big complaints, but it was single-handedly the worst audience I've ever been with in the theater. And I know this comes off as like old guy / hey guys, what's up? White people watch musicals like this. Black people watch musicals like that. Hey yo, I like musicals. This isn't Don Imus.
JL the Entertainer.
Yeah. This is Mike Epps. Mike Epps.
This isn't Imus.
But it was the worst. It was like, and it was beyond appropriate. It was beyond, in like the guy in front of me at one point that came in late, and I have seen this at black comedy clubs where, and it's annoying enough as a comedian, but a comedy club is closer to a concert than a fucking Broadway play.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland Improv is like the blackest club I've worked and the one I've worked the most, where it's like you just see people kind of walking during the headliner set, just walking around, come out to the bar, take a break, and hey, so be it. If you don't disturb the show, so be it. Though, of course, seeing people walk during a performance is always like, what? Did I fuck up? Like, what's going on? But this was the next level, treating a Broadway show like it was background music. And so he's showing them pictures of food during the second act, like maybe picking out a restaurant to go to after. And then his phone went off and it was like he had a ringtone with rap lyrics. And I was like, perfect. Like, it doesn't matter what the lyrics were, but it was just like some sort of vulgar lyrics emitting from his phone. It would have been bad enough if it was just a beep or a ring.
Yeah.
But it couldn't be. It had to be the worst. Yeah. But my favorite, and I'll leave you with this, because it was an embarrassment. And it was a great show. And like I said, you can be the enthusiasm is great. I was enthusiastic. I actually felt myself like kind of almost holding myself back a little bit. Just because you're like, you're just bopping and you're like, oh man, this is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite is when Michael, the actor playing Michael Jackson at one point, it wasn't the real Michael Jackson, said, I want to donate my money from this concert to the United Negro College Fund. And like 4 different black people just went, that's right, Mike. And I was like, come on, man.
I love it.
Come on.
Yeah.
Like it. Oh, so on that note, on that racially divisive cultural note, if you were at MJ the Musical on the first Tuesday of March, 2024, you are a stain on theater, and on this podcast. And we'll be right back with
something else.
Another complaint about theaters, but much bigger. And we're back, Mike. My break was good, and that's all I care about this episode. Okay? I'm not going to give you the power anymore.
It's fine by me, man. Like I said, my brain's fried.
Okay, good.
Wait till we do the second one.
Well, all right. Yeah, well, new shirt, new show, new shirt. You watch out. That made me think, I was thinking of the topic for today, and obviously my experience at MJ the Musical was interesting and made me think of the last time I was in any theater, and that was this past weekend to see Dune 2.
Mm.
And boy, did the theater audience fucking suck.
Why? What was so... First off, how was the movie?
I liked it.
Yeah,
I didn't see
either of them, but I keep hearing they're pretty good.
I didn't realize Dune 2 was going to be like a middle. Like, in other words, they wanted to see how it did before they gave Denis Villeneuve like another $300 million to make a movie. But I loved Dune 1. I saw it at home, though. It did come out in theaters, but I was like, well, it's on, you know, when HBO Max had that deal where they were getting, I was like, well, I got a big TV. I'll watch it here. I don't need to like go into the theater right now and risk COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Dune 1 and I rewatched it like a week or two ago and loved it again. Like I was just like, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Dune 2 is very impressive, but I didn't realize it was like shaping up to be a middle. So I was like waiting for resolution. I'm like, I think there's only like 15 minutes left in this thing. And it's like, I guess there's going to be a third part, you know, and it's been a huge hit.
It's like, there's like 12 books or something.
But I think this is meant to be a three-part movie.
Got it. Okay.
I liked it. I wanted to see it on the big screen because we didn't see the first one on the big screen. So I was like, well, if it's good, it'll be even better on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the big screen, everybody, is it comes with lots of seats for human filth.
Okay.
And shit to occupy those seats. And there is something going on. It's been going on. There's something happening here. Okay. And what it is exactly clear. Take that, Harry Nilsson. Is he the one who sang that? No, he is.
Sing, give me the lyrics again.
There's something happening.
No,
here.
That's Buffalo Springfield.
Buffalo Springfield. Yeah, I'm confusing my soundtrack of Forrest Gump. I'm actually in my mind referring to the Forrest Gump soundtrack. Yeah.
You must be thinking of the puppy song.
Well, Nelson. If you're going to San Francisco, wear flowers in your hair.
Yeah, right.
Volunteers of America. Anyway, against the wind, folks. Against the wind. I don't get this. It's the Forrest Gump soundtrack.
Zemeckis is such a hack. Good God.
But I do. Here's the thing. Forrest Gump is still good. Are you one of these people who thinks it's like dog shit?
No, I don't think it's dog shit. I do think it's a fun movie to watch.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's like what Zemeckis does now. Like you were talking about Flight a couple weeks ago.
Were we?
You mentioned that you had rewatched Flight.
I did not. Oh, I was one of your other podcasters.
Well, there's like, and that's another Zemeckis movie where he just like he loves the needle drops that are exactly what's happening in the movie. So it's like Against the Wind is him running, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Running against the wind. He like uses it like as literally as possible.
He takes away the metaphor of like your life is fading.
Yes. It's just like, oh my God, dude. Like why did you have to be so on the nose with this song? But anyway, no, I don't hate Forrest Gump at all. It's a fun
because like, I feel like
watch,
yes, Shawshank, great movie. Pulp Fiction, probably the most one of the most influential movies of our lives. Yeah. But Forrest Gump was good. Like, I think people their arguments for Pulp Fiction or Shawshank love to be like, Forrest Gump sucks. Like, no, it doesn't. Like,
I think it's because Forrest Gump is like a movie greatest hits kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the type of movies that they were making towards the end of the 80s.
Yeah.
It was like stuff that they weren't making as many things that were. That's like an early 80s thing.
Yeah.
Like Cruisin' or movies like that, like dark, bleak sort of things. You know, post Back to the Future, people were just like, you know.
Back to the Future is Zemeckis. You got to give Zemeckis his credit.
Right.
Back
yeah,
to the Future
true.
Is Zemeckis. Yep. That fucking movie's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to the Future really is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's great.
Anyway.
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
I tracked you.
The So I don't know where we got when we got off to Zemeckis. Oh, I made a pun.
Yeah.
That's good punishment. You punished me for making a pun, and it was wrong.
Right.
Harry Nilsson. No, wrong.
Buffalo Springfield.
There you go. But going to the theater now. So I'm at the theater. Usually I buy tickets in like the middle, like the handicap row, basically. Like, mm-hmm. as I like to say, I'm so tall, I'm disabled. And it's because I'm like handicapped seats, handicapped toilets, all work for me perfectly.
Yeah.
I'm the equivalent of a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So I like to sit in the handicap row because you get all the full room. I don't take the handicap seats, the accompanying seats that are supposed to be there for, you know, somebody with a wheelchair has a friend. Mm-hmm. They get that seat.
Of course.
But I like those seats when I can get them, and I forgot to buy them. We got to the theater and I was like, oh shit, I don't have, like, I didn't hit like buy yesterday. I was convinced I had these seats, but there were two seats perfectly placed in the back row of the theater, like stadium seating. So great. But then I said, shit, now I'm going to see every fucking phone in this theater light up. Usually it's just maybe a couple. Mm-hmm. At one point there were 9 different phones on during this movie. Speaking of people getting up and milling about and leaving a theater, kids, it was like watching all the problems for people under the age of 30 in one room. Talking, cell phone, multiple times, groups of friends just leaving the theater and coming back in like 10 minutes, 15 minutes later. Like, if one person leaves, it could be the bathroom, you could get another snack. But if you're leaving as a group, then you're like, don't really understand the fucking concept of a movie. Like, you don't want to leave. The point is you're at the movie. Right. You don't want to leave voluntarily.
Right.
Like, be
right.
like, catch a. Right. It's just a weird, complex science fiction film. I can have 20-minute gaps.
Right. So, I forgot to get a Slurpee.
Yeah. So I'm watching, and groups of kids just in and out, and boom. But it's not like they're leaving because they have to take a phone call or do something else. They're just, it's like they don't get what a movie theater fucking is.
Yeah, sure.
And the amount of cell phones, there was one person who I almost threw something at, but I would have probably hit someone else because I was literally, you know, if I was Tom Brady, I would have fucking pegged this dude with a closed water bottle in the back of the head. But at least 30% of the movie was on their phone on bright.
Yeah.
And it's not like theaters don't make the, I know nobody pays attention to the instructions. Well, maybe we should start making it real fucking hard.
I
not
love
to.
This. I love this. I love this. I love this.
I want, no. I've often said, I'm more in favor of the death penalty for littering than I am for murder.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that will clean up society.
Yeah, yeah.
The murderer is a murderer.
Right.
There's not 50% of the population who's just like, I might kill somebody today, motherfucker.
Yeah.
But there are 30% of the population who's like, there's no garbage? Fuck this town. Like, I see it with, we're going all in. Dog poop. Okay, sidebar on dog poop.
Yeah.
When I'm walking around my town in Bloomfield, I pick up after Cookie every time, of course.
Got to.
And there have been times when we haven't had a bag. Like, we didn't think she was going to go. You use some leaves, or you run back and get a bag, and you scoop that motherfucker up.
Pick it up, put it in your mouth.
Well, that too. The amount of times I see dog shit just sitting around, I go, well, nobody drives their dog to another town or like 15 miles away. You're letting your dog shit in your own neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, that's what I'm talking. Like, it's like, this is your neighborhood.
Right.
What are you doing? You live here.
Right.
You think it's cool to be like, you want dog shit in your neighborhood? That's, you're doing that. And at this movie, I was sitting there and I do what I do, which is I become like a fucking 6-7 ball of rage. And I'm trying to watch the movie, but it's like your fucking phone. And I know an element of that is I don't like that you're flaunting the rules. 50% of it is the visual distraction, and 50% of it, I'll admit this, is who the fuck do you think you are? That's a violent combo in my soul.
Yeah.
When it's like you're both ruining my experience in the here and now.
Yeah.
And I'm also having a philosophical rager against you in terms of who do you think you are?
Yeah.
You know, unless you're Pete Weber screaming, who do you think you are? I am. That's the only guy who I will allow to live that truth.
Who do you think you are? I am.
Pete Weber.
The best.
The best.
Yeah.
Like, Pete Weber deserves his own place in kind of a sports entertainment hall of fame because he is the one and only bowler I can name.
Yep. That's very true.
And if he was in law school, I would watch. Law school was way before he did the Who Do You Think You Are? I Am.
Yeah.
Like, in law school was like 7-8 years before that. Me and my buddy would catch him sometimes and just have a laugh and watch him.
Yeah.
He had the shades on. He was doing DX.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, yeah. He looked like this like 50-year-old guy doing like wrestling moves. He was this little angry guy bowling.
Pure bowling entertainer.
Right.
Loved
like,
it.
Like the Big Lebowski, everybody who loves Jesus in the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
This guy is like on par with that in terms of like ridiculous bowling entertainment.
Yeah.
So I'd let him. If he was in the theater texting, I'd say, I know who you think you are. You're Pete Weber. Carry on. Everyone else, not okay.
Yeah.
But I've been noted, like, when I go to a movie, and this is, and I talked a little bit about this on my Patreon. By the way, guys, if you want to see me live show, you want to support the show, you want to get hand signals from Mike, join my Patreon. Go to my website, jlcomedy.com. A lot of good stuff there for you. But the dead air.
Yes. Yes.
I'm having a brain fart.
Is it because I flashed you the 5 minutes?
It was. I was
Are
like,
you kidding?
I think you can't you read the room and see when I'm on a fucking heater?
You plugged your Patreon.
I was throwing a no hitter. I plugged the Patreon after you gave me the hand signal. I was throwing a no hitter and you said, hey, dude, you know you're throwing a no hitter right now. But no. Movies used to be like a complete sanctuary for me.
Yeah.
And I think that stems from my youth. My mom would drive me and her to the movies when I was like 9. She got her license when she was like 44. Mm-hmm. And would drive us to the movie theaters. And it was the coolest thing. It would be like, hey, can we see this movie? And then she'd be like, you want to see another one? We'd have lunch. Like the whole day. Yeah. It was so fun.
We used to do that too.
Yeah. It was so fun.
My mom used to sneak us in to the second movie. She would like, I remember going to see, we went to see something and then X-Men was playing.
We're obviously not related.
But my mom would be like, just pop in. We're already in. Just pop in. Oh. Go pop in. We'll hang out for the next like 45 minutes.
You know what X-Men. My mom would do?
What?
To set a good example for me. We'd walk back out to the ticket taker as I do Dane Cook gestures.
Yeah.
We would walk to the ticket taker and say, here, take my money. Take my money. And we go to another movie. I remember it happened. We want to see Bad Boys. I want to see Bad Boys. Like, it's like my mom was really into Will Smith and Martin Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to see Bad Boys, and it was sold out. That show was sold out. So I was like, let's try Tommy Boy. Loved it.
Yeah.
Left. There was like 3 hours till the next, the 2 hours till the next Bad Boys. So I was like, do you want to go see the next one? So she bought tickets. We went and got like a long lunch, came back, watched Bad Boys. And when I say to you the cell phone is fucking things up.
Oh, yeah.
You could, and I'm making it racial again. I could be in a theater like of Bad Boys, you know, take every stereotype you want. Like it's me, my mom, and like 80% of the theater is like young black men. Not as chaotic and weird as going to the movies is now, wherever you go. Mm-hmm. White Suburbans, the only movies that are safe from the terror of cell phones for me. My local theater, when I see like some indie movie and it's all 65-year-olds, my demo.
Yeah.
When it's all old folks, maybe you get an errant like beep, 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 beep. But then they're like, oh, shit. Yeah.
It's an accident and it's not rude.
They're not
on purpose.
Like, hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Right.
You know, trust me, if they acted like teenagers, it would be even more annoying.
Right.
But they don't.
But that version of an interruption in a movie theater is also way less jarring than in a Broadway show.
Well,
if a phone goes off in a Broadway show,
Roger Bart will fuck
up.
You up.
Right, right. Whereas, like, if it happens in a movie theater, you can walk out, like, whatever, it's okay. But I just kind of think that I think the pandemic really fucked up theaters for obvious reasons.
Yes.
But I just think that we're going to look back at 2020 specifically as the year that sort of divided, like, generations in a way that we just are starting to feel the effects of now. I think younger people don't have theater etiquette because it's not important to them. All the studios and everything, they literally, like you said, Max, they would just put the fucking movie up on Max. You didn't, you like went to the theater if you felt like it, I guess, if you could go.
But what's strange about this, if I may interrupt, I'm sorry, but what's strange about this to me is it's like, we weren't fucking frozen like Austin Powers. And I know, and trust me, a 13-year-old who emerges as a 16-year-old, it's a big difference than a 40-year-old who's 42.
Right.
You have a lot more grounding. Although, to be honest, I've seen any age besides the elderly seem to have been, like, lost their fucking minds. There's some segment of every demo that, like, forgot how to live normally. But sitting in a movie, like, what I was saying is, like, so I think it started at an early age where it was like, this is really pleasant. It's like no fighting. It's a fun time. It's candy. It's movies. It's mom being chill. Great. And then movies just became, as an adult, the thing I like to like be at.
Yeah.
And then it was not until The Dark Knight Rises, because I had, of course, I had my ticket for like that morning. And that night, there was like that guy killed 10 people or 12 people in Aurora, Colorado. Mm-hmm. We're not saying his name. I don't remember.
I don't remember. Yeah,
I would say it
either.
All the time if I could remember it. I just don't remember it.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I went into a movie theater, like not feeling like I was in a comfortable place.
Yeah.
And I remember a woman, I put my coat down in a seat that I wanted. This is you kids who don't listen to the show. This is before assigned seating. I put my coat down. And then went to get snacks. And then a woman with her couple of kids. I won't say what race she is, but it was a Michael Jackson the Musical audience member. And she had moved my coat to like another row.
Yeah.
And I was like, normally, as you can imagine, I'd be like, what are you doing? But since there had just been a mass murder at a showing of The Dark Knight Rises, I said, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm already a little more uncomfortable than I am. I don't need to make other people uncomfortable, no matter how right I am. One day I'll podcast and get that feeling of satisfaction.
But for today, you're minding your P's and Q's.
Right. Yeah. But movies have slowly, and I'd like to give Tom Cruise, Top Gun Maverick, some of the credit for this, because that was the first movie post-pandemic, even though I'd seen a few other movies, that was the first movie where I felt like I was re-surrendering to the bigness, the joy, the freedom of like a big movie, and just being like, God damn it, Tom Cruise. And he comes in the beginning and he's like, thank you for coming to this movie. And I was like, yes. Like I was so far. I was like, yeah, he's just saying like a fuck you to Nicole Kidman. Yeah, have your AMC generic thing. I'm thanking my people personally.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a movie. I think that's why it was so well received. I think there were more people having that feeling than just me, where it was like, I had seen other movies that I liked in the theater, but the Top Gun Maverick thing was like, whoa.
Yeah.
But I also remember a man on his phone for half the movie. And I was like, maybe you shouldn't be at the movie. Like if there's an emergency going on, maybe you shouldn't be at the movie. But now this is obviously keeping in the theme with our show in terms of, yeah, the cell phone plays a part in this. The lack of manners plays a part in this. But it's this idea of like going out and being part of a community used to mean surrendering a little bit of your 100% selfish motives and interests.
Yeah.
And this not staring at a phone for half a movie is like a real small ask in the grand scheme of, can you be a member of the community?
Mm-hmm.
Like you just paid $20 to see this movie. Can you just act like a normal person, like most of us do at the movies? But now it's like, it feels like a quarter of the theater is just on their phones and then like people, and the milling about is really more of a youth thing, but that's fucking weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you at the movie? And I mean that in a serious way. You're at a mall. There's a food court. There's stores. There's benches. There's ice cream shoppies. Why don't you go to one of those, Archie and Jughead, instead of fucking treating the movie
so
like
old jail.
Treating a movie, Steamboat
Archie
Willie.
And Jughead. Oh my
Steamboat
God.
Willie. No, but they were on. Hey, WB or CW or whoever, UPN, had a fucking show about them.
Yep.
So don't you.
That's so funny.
When I get my first young listener, they're going to go, AC Slater and Zach show up. And you know, but my point is like, you don't treat a movie like a jazz quartet at a dinner party.
No, I know.
And yet that's exactly what the fuck they're doing. And it's ruining, like, it's like a contract.
Yes.
Like going to a movie is like a contract.
Yeah.
We're going to give you snacks and a big screen and
surround sound.
More enjoyment than you can get at home.
Yeah, yeah.
For that value. Mm-hmm. But these people are making it worse. Like, and I mean people on their phone, young people. It's just there is this disconnect now on just how you act. And that's why, before we go to our break,
yeah,
that's why I'm usually very pessimistic on the show, but there is a knight in shining armor. There is a lonely voice crying out in the wilderness, and it's Alamo Drafthouse Cinemas.
Yeah, they're
great. Because they don't fuck around. Like, if I ever became a celebrity again, I would want to do a fucking endorsement with Alamo Drafthouse.
Yeah.
Like, because it's like you do it the right way. Like, whoever runs your fucking business, either you love movies or you just realize that there was a market for people who love movies and are sick of the bullshit, or both. And that's it. If I lived anywhere near an Alamo Drafthouse, it's the only fucking place I would go to movies because they enforce the rules. It's kind of their signature. It's like a funny thing. I guess maybe when some other people go to movies, they're like, excuse me, this isn't an Alamo Drafthouse. I can talk and fuck my girlfriend and watch and watch shows on my iPad. That was something that happened at a movie recently, and I forget, and then we'll break. At a movie recently, somebody brought out an iPad.
That's pretty wild.
And I was like, am I in a parody? Is Mike setting up like a hidden camera show? Like, watch what happens when somebody brings out an entire like fucking desktop MacBook with printer at the movies, you know? But it was somebody on an iPad, and I was like, this is insane. So the point is, my listeners, I know my demographic. You're not really the problem, but there is a war coming. I don't want to paint this too dire. There is a civil war coming to our movie theater soon, and you're either going to be on the right side or the wrong side. Comedy talk after this.
And now, from the Slickback Studios newsroom in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, here is Scott Pelley with a Rain on Your Parade special report.
This is Scott Pelley on assignment from 60 Minutes for Rain on Your Parade with JL's Punchdown of the Week. JL posted on Twitter, now known as X, Caitlin Clark passed Pete Maravich, which is a big deal, but no one ever mentions that I scored more points in college than LeBron and Kobe combined. And then a series of people began to mention other players who had gone from high school straight to the pros. Awful. JL?
Scott, we always love having Scott Pelley in the building and on the show. JL, you're back.
Yeah, no, it's
Scott.
Me.
Did you see Scott on the way out?
Yeah, no, he's a big fucking buff dude.
Yeah.
You know, I hope when I'm that old, I'm fucking still throwing.
Good looking older guy. Yeah.
I mean, that's the Punchdown of the Week. I didn't want to call out anybody individually because it was happening on various platforms. I thought that was more of a community error.
Yeah.
Where it was like,
you were mad at everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Like LeBron and Kobe.
Check that to me.
It's done more as these are two people around my age. Kobe was like 6 months older than me. LeBron is 4 years younger than me. They're the two most iconic high school to pro players, even though, yes, Kevin Garnett, Moses Malone, et cetera, mm-hmm. did it. And the joke is tight. It's like, boom. If I just gave a laundry list of every high school player, brevity is the soul of wit.
Sure.
And it seems all these soulless, witless people want to do laundry list comedy. That's not how I operate. So thank you, Scott, for doing the hard work there. And a special review. Well, a review of a special. I don't know how special the review is. Mm. But Rory Scovel has an HBO Max or a Max special. Can I dead name HBO Max and just call it HBO?
It's so hard for me to not do that.
Yeah, I'm going to call it HBO.
Max is such a stupid name.
It's, in my opinion, there are two branding errors that we've been present for in the last like year and a half that are unreal mm-hmm. in terms of how bad they are. X,
Oh, yeah.
Twitter X becoming is X.
So bad. People don't even refuse to call it X.
It's not even a refusal. It's like, I'm on X. Like, people be like, what? X sounds so vague.
Yeah.
And HBO, going to HBO Max is fine because it was differentiating, like, that's the streamer versus, that's fine. HBO Max is a streamer. And going, yeah, I think the problem is HBO. I think, the problem is you turning your platform into a fucking dollar store with 500 titles and Discovery and 90 Day Fiancé. Like, yeah. It's like, do you want to watch The Sopranos, The Wire, or 90 Day Fiancé cum dump sessions?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
We have 50 shows about midgets.
Yeah.
10 shows about 600 pound people.
No, it's like going into Tiffany's.
Sex in the City.
Yeah, it's like I'm going ring shopping at Tiffany's, and here's a princess cut, and here's a fucking our Cracker Jack selection of rings. And
this on the floor.
If you'd like a ring pop, also we have this ring for $105,000.
Yeah,
and we have a ring pop also that you can have. Welcome to Tiffany's. That's what they did. Let's call it Max. The worst. But he has a new special, and it's funny because Rory Scovel, I knew Rory Scovel very early, and I'll give you one brief story. He beat me in a competition at the Triad Theater where I filmed several of my albums, recorded several of my albums and specials. And I finished second, he finished first. And I remember the person who organized The Bringer had said to me, yeah, no, I mean, we thought Rory had the best set and you did a lot of impressions, and impressions, you know, aren't really like stand-up comedy. And from that day on, I dedicated myself to stand-up comedy. And then after a brief 15-year struggle, I reverted back to impressions and became famous. It makes you wonder if I didn't take to heart everything everyone ever fucking said to me. If maybe
I've been trying to tell you, JL.
If maybe I would be fucking rich. I'd be in my 10th season of SNL, probably titty fucking Sydney Sweeney still from the after party this past week. Fiance or no fiance, I'll curb stomp Glenn Powell. He's a jacked 5'8" guy. I can take him. but anyway, besides that, I thought that was very rich in terms of like, yeah, I decided, okay, I'm going to really work on my stand-up. And I got really good, but like, it was still the impressions that got me the money. But Rory Scovel, I knew because he started in D.C. like a year after I did. So he was like already getting a name for himself from people I knew in D.C. because he did like several years in D.C. when I was back in New York working and working on my craft. And then we had, I don't want to call it a falling out, but it was a falling out and it was completely my fault.
You don't say.
Well, no, but here's why. You're going to love this story, even though it's unfortunate. But I really liked Rory. I still like Rory Scovel, but I don't know. I don't think he likes me. And that's okay. Like, I'm not, this isn't one of these ones where I'm like, what the fuck? He probably didn't even think about me, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But I had seen this comedy troupe from Cleveland. And one of the guys in the troupe was a really funny dude. He's had several viral videos, but he was like the king of Cleveland for a while. Just this kind of like content to be like almost like the Goodwill Hunting of comedy in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Like, he should have been in LA, but he just didn't want to. He liked living in his hometown.
Yeah.
But him and his comedy troupe did this bit at like a sketch fest, and they were doing it a lot. And I think it was on the internet where like two comics got on stage and were doing totally different sets. But every like 30 seconds their individual jokes would arrive at the same hacky line.
Yeah.
And then they'd be like, so anyway, I'm talking to my wife, right? Yeah, fucking. And like,
what, he did that on Conan, right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
So he did it with John Doerr, another very funny guy who I've worked with.
Yeah.
Who didn't know me personally, so we got along great when I opened for him in Syracuse. Really good guy. And I always thought he was really funny. I thought both of them were funny.
Yeah.
And Rory I knew personally. But people were sharing the Rory Scovel, John Doerr, Conan bit. And I didn't mean this to be like they stole it.
Uh-oh.
But I did feel, you know, I fight for the little guy. Sometimes I fight like a blunt instrument. And I basically said I liked it I said basically something inartful and harsh because I felt like more like I was in defense of those guys than I was attacking, but it came off very attack-like. I liked it better when it was done first by these guys.
Yeah.
And I think Rory did not like that, understandably, because you can easily read that as me suggesting you stole it.
Yeah.
Whereas it was more of my projecting my own anger at not having my shit get the respect it deserved. Where I was like, I don't want that. I want some other little troupe who's fucking crushing it with this bit to like now not get there. And they did the same thing. But it's different if it's your own work.
Right. Yeah, it's way different.
I was like acting like defense counsel for the Cleveland comedy troupe.
Yeah.
And he wrote to me something and he basically, I think he like not so vaguely was basically like said, if I remember what he had written to me, because I didn't want him to take it that way, but I think he had taken it, understandably, had taken it exactly as harshly as could be taken. And I think he said, like, and I've been trying to convince people in comedy that you're really not an asshole.
Oh, man.
Hey, I have to take my lump when it's earned.
Yeah.
And I felt bad because I liked him and I understood that why that would be something that he would be very mad about. And you don't hear me apologize, but I can be honest about like my own fuck ups.
Yeah.
So with all that said, I hated his new special. No, I'm kidding. I really liked his new special. It's and this isn't me trying to get in his good graces. Like most of everywhere, he doesn't listen to this podcast. But it was called, remind me, it's Religion, Sex, and a Few Things in Between.
I just closed it, but yes, it's something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's on Max.
Yeah.
And I am not a big alt comedy fan. I always found him to be funny. And funnier than a lot of the alt comics who are sort of legendary alt comic types. Mm-hmm. Maybe because I knew him personally, it made me more engaged in what he was doing. But I always found him funny, even though I'm not traditionally a fan of like quirky, non sequitur, what the fuck is going on here type stuff. I really liked his special. Mm-hmm. And if you're somebody who's a fan of maybe offbeat comedy, it's like it builds. Like I liked it. The more it went on, the more I liked it. Like he got to this bit about a gangbang that was just really funny because it was like, you know, he's treating everybody like a normal person in the gangbang. It's like, do you think the like wife just went out and got snacks? Like before, you know, for the guys who aren't actively in it, like so they can have some chips and like, you know, whatever they want to drink. Like, what do you want to drink? What do you like kind of turning a gangbang into just a normal party or gathering is funny, like when you break it down like that. But I really liked it and it just built. So it's like, to me, I would say if you're watching like 5 minutes in, you're like, I don't know, but I would recommend just let it build. Because I thought it was good. The only thing, he did it in a different way, but his special was like the fourth out of five specials I've seen recently that do like an epic intro and then mock the epic intro. Mm-hmm. That's almost becoming a cliche, like right before our eyes, but he didn't do it the same way. But I'm seeing a lot of comics now, like, be honest with yourself. You want the big intro.
Oh, sure.
And then you have to make fun of it. Like if I ever do comedy again, which I think I will, I have a bunch of shows coming up, but if I ever do a special again, I want to do the most and be like, no, I'll like start my set going, was that too much? No, it wasn't enough. Do you know how good I am? Do you know? In the words of John Malkovich in The Line of Fire, okay. Do you know the things I have done for God and country, Frank? Some pretty fucking awful things. Now show me some goddamn respect. That's how I feel about my entire comedy career. Mm. The point is, not my career. It's Rory Scovel, whose career is thriving. I really liked it, and it's different. It's definitely different, but not in like a, oh, it's so quirky. It's good, and I think it's a change of pace from a lot of the stuff I've been watching. So Religion, Sex, and a Few Things in Between, or thereabouts is the title. I apologize. But go check it out. It's Rory Scovel special on HBO Max. So on that note, on that pleasant mea culpa, you know, olive branch, but it's not an olive branch because if I didn't like it, I would say I didn't like it. But I liked it. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you for, you know. Why is that funny?
It's funny, JL.
Well, thank you. Unintentional comedy is my strong suit. But yes, if you have comments, thoughts, obviously, once again, we got to tell you, go to the YouTube.
Yes, please.
Leave comments. Engage with that, please. Share the show with a friend. If there's an episode or you like it overall or there's a particular episode, share. Sharing means caring. And leave us a nice review on Spotify and or Apple Podcasts, please.
Yeah.
So on that note, thank you, and I will see you next Thursday.